Welcome to the Princeton Laxcast. I'm Jerry Price. I'm joined by Princeton head men's lacrosse coach Matt Matalon. And coach, welcome.
Hey, Jerry. Happy to be back.
So a lot going on with your team. We'll get into the games coming up. We got two games. The game Saturday at noon against Johns Hopkins on Sherrod Field, and then Tuesday at 4 o'clock at Navy Marine Corps Stadium, the Tigers and Navy. But first, let's look back at the game this past Saturday against Virginia. 12-11 loss to Virginia in overtime. A lot of opportunities to win that one, but on the other hand, it was one of those games that was tight throughout, and whoever lost was going to think they had a lot of chances to win it. Went to overtime, Virginia winning on fairly lucky bounce, not taking anything away from them, of course, but the game-winning shot from Ian Laviano hitting, I believe it was Aaron Roberts' stick, and changing direction and just trickling past John Levine. But a very entertaining game to watch, but a frustrating game to lose. And what were some of your main takeaways?
You know, we're still growing up as a program. I think this was a great first test for us. I think the Monmouth game allowed us to kind of get our system set in stone a little bit and just learn how to play and start making some of the reads. And then, you know, as we got into this game, you kind of hit the nail on the head. We had a handful of opportunities, and the team that lost, would come away from it being like, we kind of let that one slip away. And that's how we feel a little bit. You know, we've got to do a better job as a staff preparing our guys for certain scenarios, putting them in the right spots to be able to execute. I think there were some positives we were able to take away from it. We were able to grow up in certain parts of the game, but still a lot of early season stuff that we've got to clean up.
A lot of positives, I thought, from that game. One is, and we've talked about this, is I thought the game a year ago in Charlottesville, which was an 18-15 UVA win, felt like UVA was in control of that one. This one, I thought, it was two very evenly matched teams, and I thought from a mental perspective, I thought your team felt it was going to win the game. It played like a team that was playing to win, not a team that was happy to be close.
Yeah, I think last year we were just playing from behind a little bit. So we were always, we were down 4 or 5 at a couple times throughout that game, that we were always trying to get that game back into grasp within our reach. This year we were up a couple times and we were up late. We were pretty, we're obviously still pretty upset about it. And, we're kind of taking that motivation, those emotions, and learning, having a good hard week of practice this week. But yeah, I thought we were in the game the entire time up until the end. I thought that we had an opportunity to get a stop there. And had we, maybe we would have had an opportunity to put in the back of their net. But
so I was talking to, I was talking in the press box during the game, and Jeff Shannon was there from Inside Lacrosse and Vince from UVA. And we were talking about the shot clock. And one thing I said is the game in Charlottesville last year was 10-10 at halftime, and this one was 6-5 at halftime, or 5-5 at halftime. So basically half the number of goals were scored. And I said, one thing about the shot clock is that while it's meant to push the tempo of the game, sometimes it looked like teams, realizing they had a clock to work with, didn't want to do anything too quickly. It's almost like, and I've seen this in a couple of games I watched on TV or online, it seems like teams are not, you won't be able to sit on the ball for 3 or 4 minutes, but it doesn't mean that teams are going to shoot it quickly. It's almost like they're like, all right, we have 80 seconds to work with, and let's make sure we run our offense and use a lot of that time and try to get a defensive breakdown as opposed to just pushing it up and down the field.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I mean, we do a little bit of that. We're very aware. There are certain scenarios, and you'll get to see it play out, as we watch a bunch of college across this season. But if you are fortunate enough to pick up an offensive rebound and earn yourself another full clock, I think the trend right now is most teams are going into, okay, hey, take a deep breath, spread back out, prepare yourself to reattack, and it does appear to be slowing the game down a little bit. I also think that, as you get into those shot clock scenarios and those short time scenarios at the end of every quarter, first, second, third, and fourth, you as a coaching staff, and specifically our group, we kind of look into where we can kind of manipulate the clock and figure out if there are 1, 2, 3 possessions left, and really figure out, how that plays into the score and how you want to finish up that particular quarter. Whereas, in years past, that just wasn't as much of a focus with the shot clock.
I didn't realize one thing about the rule. So if the defensive team on a dead ball calls timeout, it resets the shot clock. So there was one time it was late in the game when it was tied. It was before Durbin shot on the last on Princeton's last possession, where there was maybe like 50 seconds left on the shot clock. There was a shot that went out of bounds. Princeton backed it up, and then UVA called timeout, and they reset the shot clock. And everybody in the press was like, he didn't save it. He didn't come close to saving it. It was completely wide. And then realized that the defensive team calls the timeout, it resets the shot clock, which I think is actually pretty smart because that may enter into teams thinking, hey, it's one thing if there's 50 seconds left and we want to get the right guys on the field or we want to, you know, talk about something specific, but if there's 30 seconds or 20 seconds, the defense is much less likely to call timeout.
It is. It's there's very much strategy behind it. And, you know, we're very aware of it as a coaching staff in terms of when we were to if we were to take a defensive timeout, you know, we would want it to be close to where we do not get penalized losing a bunch of time with the shot clock reset. Now, it is a smart rule because if that shot goes out with, say, 15 seconds left and the defensive team were to call a timeout, they could say, hey, you know, 15 seconds left, let's throw a zone, let's throw some junk defense, and it would be favoring the defense. This way, the way the rule is officiated and written does protect the offense from that scenario.
So let's talk about some of the specific players in the game, and we'll get back to one other rule change that impacted the game. But Charlie Durbin, 4 goals. Playing with a lot of confidence after missing last year, and where do you think he is?
He did a really nice job, really opportunistic, you know, hit a couple good shots. We expect a lot from that guy, so we're looking forward to seeing him throughout the season.
And then Jake Stevens continuing the fast start to his career on the wings on faceoffs. He, in 2 games, has 16 ground balls. 14 of them are on faceoffs. And if you look at the faceoff stats, last year at UVA, UVA won 80% of the faceoffs. This year in the game, Saturday, Princeton won 16 out of 26. And, you know, that is dramatic improvement, especially considering it's the same. Well, UVA has 2 faceoff guys now. Last year it was the one guy, but it's a freshman and the guy who was back from last year and the same wing guys. And, you know, they're good wing guys from UVA. So that was a great sign.
Yeah, they were really athletic. You know, we went at that part of the game with a specific strategy. We were able to come out at 62%. We knew they were very good at creating plays, creating offense off of the faceoff, and they still did a very good job of it. They created quite a few. I think they had six or seven transitional opportunities off the faceoff, and they actually only scored on one of them. So we'd like to think our defensive technique worked out well there. But we did a heck of a job scrapping it up there, and Jake Stevens has such a knack for ground balls. He's a great weapon to have up there for us.
And Sowers with 4 goals and 2 assists, and he would have had, you know, twice or even 3 times as many assists if the UVA goalie hadn't broken the class of 52 stadium record for saves in a game with 24. And sometimes you just run into goalies who are on fire like that. Being a former goalie yourself, what does that do? And now as a coach looking at it from the other side, but when the goalie is in such a rhythm as their goalie was in and is making so many saves, and, you know, he didn't make a lot of spectacular saves. He made some that were spectacular. But what he did was he made every save he should have made. And what does that do to the shooters?
Yeah, we can't take anything away from him. You know, Birkinshaw had 24 saves, heck of a performance on 52. And for his first collegiate start, we'd like to shoot the ball better. You know, we'd like to put 35 shots.
But does that start to
on cage?
Does that start to weigh on you, or like another shot he saved, another one he saved, and I got to be perfect on every shot now?
It doesn't. I don't think so. I think our shooters understand that, you know, they approach every offensive possession as that opportunity and just that, you know, go out there, try to create the best shot we can, and whoever takes it, make sure it's hard and heavy and on cage, and see what happens from there. So we just like to do a better job shooting. That guy did a nice job in the cage.
So I'm sure you would have liked to maybe had a midweek game this week to try to turn the page quicker on that, but you have to sit on that loss for a week, and then now it's Johns Hopkins, and one of Princeton's oldest rivals and one of the better rivalries in college lacrosse, two of the most successful programs in the history of college lacrosse, and you've played a series of interesting games against Johns Hopkins because there really is no rhyme or reason. It's 1 year it's a blowout, the next year it's close, then it's 2 close games and a blowout here, and the home team wins, and then the visiting team wins 8 in a row, and then the home team can't lose. And yeah, so there's like history means nothing in this series. 2 years ago at 52, it was all Princeton. Last year at Hopkins, it was close at the half, and then they had a great third quarter, broke the game open. They're off to a 1-2 start. Losses to Loyola and Towson before a win over North Carolina last week. I don't know how much, I'm assuming you saw that whole game, the tape, and it was muddy and rainy and everything else down there. What do you see from Hopkins?
I mean, really impressive program, highly ranked to start the season. Their 2 losses are to 2 top 10 teams.
Two top four teams.
The team in Carolina that they just beat, another very good team. So it seems like a battle-tested group early. We anticipate a great one. You know, they have a great coaching staff. Their systems are always buttoned up. They're always very organized, disciplined, fundamental team. So, you know, we expect an absolute battle on 52. We're very much looking forward to it, though.
So when you have a game against a team that last year really handled you, and I thought, like, handled us, you know, handled Princeton fairly physically in that game as well, just as Princeton had done to Hopkins the year before, and, you know, the game 2 years ago, 52, was never close. Do you get anything out of that, or you just, it's completely different teams? Do you look at the film from last year and try to figure out what went right and what went wrong? Or?
I mean, we always look at the tape from last year just because you can learn a lot about tendencies and see what they're doing similarly from this year to last year and as coaching staffs have or have not changed over. But, no, I think our guys will be fueled by the fact that we kind of got our butts handed to us last year down at Homewood. I think our guys –
it was close in the first half. I mean, it was a one-goal game at halftime.
I think our guys take this rivalry, you know, extremely personally, but it's the next game for us. It's the next one up, next one on the docket. You know, we'll approach every game the same way in terms of that sense. But yeah, our guys will be really excited for this one. This will be a heck of a game.
And then it's a two-game week with a midweek game mixed in, the first midweek game of the year, and it's a good one. As Tuesday, Princeton will be in Annapolis to play Navy, and it's the first meeting between the teams since the 2004 NCAA semifinal game that Navy won by one. And then lost to Syracuse in the championship game. Navy, another good team. What drew you to want to play Navy? And
we're really excited. I mean, look, we've, you know, in terms of scheduling here, we're going to continue to try to schedule the best teams in the country. Navy being at the top of the Patriot League year in and year out. You know, obviously an incredible institution, and you know, getting two high academic institutions to be able to compete always makes sense. But then also, you know, to be able to get a midweek to bring our guys down to Annapolis, play at Marine Corps Stadium, I think it'll be a wonderful experience for our organization.
So one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, and I saved it till the end, is we've seen a lot of this so far, and it touched the Princeton-Virginia game, is the dive. And the trouble that it's causing for officials because of the – I don't know even how to word it, the uncertainty of what is coming. But in the game against Virginia, between Princeton and Virginia, each team had a disallowed goal on a dive. And, you know, for my money, I thought both should have counted. So what am I missing here with this?
It's a really, really challenging rule to officiate. I think that as much as excitement as it has brought back to the game, it's tough. It's tough on the officials. They are very bang-bang plays. There's a lot of subjectivity to it. And I think they did a pretty good job. I think that, you know, as for the goals that were disallowed, you know, we were both a little shocked, and then actually Virginia was penalized on one of their
dives. Virginia was penalized on the one that was disallowed for Princeton for a push, and then penalized on the one that was disallowed for Virginia for making contact with the goalie.
Really, you know, really tough swing of events anytime a goal gets taken off the board and that team were to be penalized. You know, maybe that changes in the future. And, from my personal opinion, I would hope so. But, no, it's as exciting as it is, it's caused a lot of issues. I think the refs are doing their best to handle it. I think throughout the game, you'd like to think they keep it even, but, you know, the refs aren't reffing colors. They're just reffing plays. So, you know, it's very challenging for those guys. But I think they have done a nice job thus far.
I can see possibly the dive. Maybe somebody in the near future says that this is a failed experiment and they take it away. But one thing I definitely want to see is this has been a major adjustment with the new rules, and I think they're for the better. But I'd like to see them stay that way now for a while. And it's hard when you have a rules committee whose job is to, you know, analyze rule changes. But there have been so many rules changes through the years. And I was actually explaining this to somebody that it's not that long ago that you had to keep it in the box when they called a stall.
Sure, or there were horns on sidelines, you know, in every clearing situation. No, the rules have changed. I mean, absolutely for the better. And to your point about keeping it the same, it's something that I believe in from the bottom of my heart. I firmly believe that as soon as we can get a set of rules that works for our game, it needs to be held throughout the different levels of, you know, in terms of the youth leagues.
Well, that's where it's
the,
like,
intermediate, the high school, the college, the pro, the world. If we can get one set of rules, I think that this sport will grow even faster than it is right now.
Yeah, it's interesting because in the world championships, you still keep it in the box on a stall warning, and there
sure,
is no,
and
there's no timing rules.
I think our world could get shaken up a little bit if there were to become an Olympic sport and the format of that. I from the rumblings, I doubt it would be a 10-on-10 game on the field the size we're used to playing on. So I think that that will look a little different too. You just hope. I mean, look, from my perspective, we want the kids to be playing the same game that we're playing, you know, that we're recruiting. And then we also want the officials the ability to, you know, start officiating younger ages and then grow as they get better at reffing those sets of rules, rather than a high school ref having one different sets of rules, a pro ref, a college ref, just very challenging for those guys.
But one thing I will say from the point of view of the officials is they have to be really happy that they don't have to worry about when to put a stall warning on that starts a 30-second timer anymore, because now it's 80 seconds and go. And that was, I think, you know, whether you thought the game needed a shot clock for tempo or anything like that, I think taking that away from the refs, that alone has made the shot clock worth it.
We think it's incredible. Our kids love playing in it. We as coaches love it. I know I would have loved playing
it. I'm sure the refs love it, too.
I'm sure the refs love it, too.
So we will keep an eye on the rules changes as the season goes along. It's going to move along quickly now as the month of March begins. It's a busy month for the Tigers. They start out Saturday, noon, on Sherrod Field, a doubleheader with the women. It's Princeton against Johns Hopkins at noon. The women take on Columbia in their Ivy League opener at 3. And then Tuesday, it's the trip to Annapolis. That's a 4 o'clock start at Navy Marine Corps Stadium. The following Saturday is a short trip to Rutgers. And then the Ivy season starts at Penn. Takes you to March 23rd when Yale is here. The big one, March 26th, Bill Tierney in Denver. Bill Tierney coming back to Princeton with his Denver Pioneers. And then Brown to end the month. So it's quite a month for your team.
Yep, and we appreciate all the support. An incredible, incredible crowd at 52 this past Saturday. We felt it. Our guys felt it. Just an incredible, incredible atmosphere. So thank you to everyone who came out. Thank you in advance for the folks that come out in the future.
Yeah, 2,047 fans there on Saturday, and we'll see what this Saturday brings with Johns Hopkins. So Matt Madelon, thanks for being with us. We'll be back next Wednesday to talk about those two games and look ahead to Rutgers. And for Princeton head coach Matt Madelon, I'm Jerry Price. Thanking you for being here on the Princeton Laxcast, and thank you for your continued support of Princeton men's lacrosse.